Welcome to the Electrify News Podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo, America's largest e-mobility festival coming to five major cities in 2022.
Welcome back to the Electrify News Podcast. Why are you laughing already? Why are you laughing? Okay, I know why you're laughing already.
Because this is a wonderful show, a wonderful program. I'm proud to be a part of it. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the latest issue of automotive news, where they're talking about Electrify Expo. We grew 40% over last year's initial show in Orange County. And we're going to carry that momentum all the way into Seattle. It's going to be really exciting.
I got to say, you know, it's the Matt and Joe show, or the Joe and Matt show, that keeps people coming back for more.
That's what I've tried to tell everybody.
Yeah, I got to go to bed at night. And we're like, well, we have to say that that's what's driving this excitement.
No, I just sent an email that said that this is exactly what people are coming for. And the reason that it only grew 40% in Long Beach was because you weren't there.
I would have been higher. The math checks out. It's the 80-20 rule. If I'd have been there, it's the other 40%. There's that 20% of, well, maybe it's just that there's people excited about electrification.
There are people excited about electrification. And it's really wild, right? Because, I mean, there has actually been a ton of news lately. So what were we just talking about? SemaConnect got bought out by, I believe it was EDO.
Blink.
By Blink.
No,
yeah,
well,
Blink.
So there's, yeah. So starting out on the infrastructure side of things. Yeah. So that's a biggie. So Blink has been around for a long time, as has SemaConnect. What's interesting about this is that SemaConnect is a predominant, I mean, they are a level two standard charging infrastructure play. They're great. You know, they do a lot of workplace charging, municipal dwelling charging for apartments, really for like long-term stay charging.
Yeah, where you're going to be there for 4, 5, 6 hours at a time.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and they've got a great footprint that's been growing, you know, for years now. Blink, similarly, they're predominantly level two in standard charging, but they do have some fast charging out there. But so this is an interesting connection, because it's going to really expand what Blink is offering from a level two perspective. And most people that I've talked to about this think that it's really kind of a way to align them to be really well positioned for whatever might come down the pipeline for federal funding for level two workplace charging, things like that. And those are two big networks coming together. So I'll be interested to see how the engineering teams from both combine to create a better experience through the two networks, and also how they try to represent that it's one network, being that the designs of the chargers are very different and they have branding that's different. That I'm always curious about how they'll do that from a user experience perspective, but that's a big move.
Yeah, it is a big move. It's not the only one either, right? You were telling me.
Yeah, so Schneider Electric just announced yesterday that they've acquired EV Connect.
Yeah, and that's a big move.
That's a biggie. To me, that one's kind of up there with, you know, with Shell acquiring Green Lots, you know, years ago. It's a larger, you know, well-established corporation that's buying into an EV infrastructure software play, and really what that's going to do. Now, Schneider Electric's been doing a lot of investments in the EV space.
Yeah, but they've been doing a lot of the hardware as well. Like a lot of the hardware that some of these networks are using is being manufactured by companies like ABB, Schneider, things like that.
Yeah. So this kind of expands their portfolio for what their offerings are going to look like. And, you know, we're starting to see some consolidation happening here. So some of these major players are combining a bit. Some of them are being, you know, acquired by other, you know, larger companies that haven't been network focused, but they want that in their portfolio.
Yeah.
So this is going to be, you know, we're starting to see some of that movement happening, but there's still a lot more consolidation to happen. I'm very curious to see what more news comes out about the EV Connect, you know, acquisition from Schneider. But again, Schneider, they've already been in the space, so I think this is a smart play for them too.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm really interested. To me, these are two different things, because you've got on one side the merger of two networks, and you have sort of these two big animals becoming one bigger version of the same kind of animal, right?
Yeah.
The other one is very much like what I think Tesla would call a vertical integration, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the company that makes the stuff is buying the people who essentially buy it from them and put it out into the wild. And I think that if I was guessing, I think that there would be something there in the sense that it's a broader sense of ownership, meaning that it seems like they're going to be more invested in making sure that their chargers don't have any downtime, that they're better maintained, because, you know, obviously I think there is part of that, like, saving face aspect to any of these German companies, right? Like, we sell you the best chargers and you do not do the maintenance, and now makes us look bad.
Well, EV Connect predominantly is, again, their software is and their interconnection,
right,
of how they set up networks is really, I think, their core competency. Yeah, I'll be honest, like on the maintenance side of it, that's, I mean, even with Semiconect and Blink, combining forces, Semiconect, they sell their hardware and software to whoever buys it. They don't necessarily maintain their chargers in the same way Blink maintains some of them, but not all of them. They also do a similar offering where they offer up hardware, software, and it's then quote maintained by whoever bought it. So that's still left to be, there's a lot left to be desired there for a driver, even with these, that merger. And then with Schneider and EV Connect, that's just not even in the play. From what I've seen. So that is a big gap still about, and again, we're seeing a lot more news coming out about, uptime for chargers. There was that Berkeley study that came out about it a few weeks ago that got a lot of attention. And there's some networks responding saying, no, this isn't accurate. But I really think that at the end of the day, when there's criticisms of what happens in this space where improvements could be made, as a driver, I have to acknowledge, like, yeah, that's not wrong. And if we're going to want more drivers to believe, we got to do a better job,
I wonder if, to me, the Shell green lots thing is so interesting, because Shell understands how to make their franchisees maintain their gas pumps, right? Like, sure, you go to a Shell station, it's not the case that 25% of all the pumps at Shell stations are bad, right?
Right, right.
They pretty much all work all the time. So there's maintenance being done there. And it'll be interesting to see when Shell when Shell Energy sells a charging station or installs a charging station at one of these franchise locations, how they're going to mandate and how they're going to monitor that uptime, I think is going to be really interesting.
Well, frankly, I think that's going to be the better. So we finally have graduated into a place where I think it actually makes sense to put fast charging next to gas pumps, because we're finally getting to a place where the speed at which you can charge, whether it's, level six, 150 kilowatt, level seven, maybe 300 kilowatt, that's in the vein of where you can be basically in and out in a period of, 15 to 30, 40 minutes, depending on the level you're at. That to me that's comparable and competitive to a gas pump. There's been a lot of people arguing, saying we should put fast chargers next to gas stations because that's where people naturally go. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But if it's not high powered enough, that's a bad comparison model right there for the consumers to experience. But Shell, if they are rolling out chargers at their gas stations that are of that power level, I think it's going to create a better, a better comparison. But also, they're still rolling out fast charging and chargers that are not at their gas stations right now. I mean, they Shell Recharge, which is the new brand name for what Green Lots changed over to, they're managing chargers that are all over the country here in North America. I mean, in North America, US and Canada, and they're not necessarily a gas station. So they have kind of a mixed play there. But I think Shell, to your point, which I think is important, they understand the importance of managing, these fueling experiences. I hope that continues to improve based on how they might roll that out, because their brand might suffer because of it. And I don't think they're ready to have that happen.
I don't think they're ready to have that happen either. Moving on to kind of the next topic we wanted to talk about, we briefly touched when you and I were talking last week, it had kind of just happened and everybody was still reeling that Tesla kind of raised their prices more or less across the board, as much as $6,250 on the big Model X with the Falcon wings and all that. Yeah. But still significant $2,500 to $5,000 price hike all across the board. And over at General Motors, we saw GMC Hummer and Cadillac Lyriq, their prices went up, but then they slashed prices on the Bolt.
Yeah.
I mean, like a $6,300 rebate plus a couple of other incentives. Like, I mean, at this point, I think I can buy a Bolt for like 20 grand.
You get it, here in Oregon, for example, there are two Oregon credits. If you were to buy a Bolt now here in Oregon, you can basically get one for almost $21,000.
Yeah, that seems to be, it's fairly close. I think the number here is about 23.5 with all of my, all of my stuff. And like, honestly, at 23 grand with gas at $7 and, seven plus a gallon, you can't afford not to buy one of these things.
I mean, the only drawback on the Bolt is it's not the fastest fast charging capable car. It's only a level 4 fast charging car. So it's not like an Ioniq 5 or a EV6, but the build quality is great. The range is great. They've improved the heck out of the interior of the new Bolts compared to.
And it's half the price.
That's the thing.
Not forget, it's half the price.
No, that's what I was going to like land on. It's like, but when you're spending 20, 23 ish compared to high 40s, maybe 50, I mean, yeah, consumers are going to say, well, what's my use case? then someone might even say, like, well, I'm not taking road trips in this thing all the time, so I'm going to go for the Bolt.
That's way too rational, right? Because we talk about, you know, we talk about true. Market psychology all the time. And in the United States, we live in a country where, you know, we buy for that low use case scenario. We buy for that, you know, why do you have an F-350 Cummins diesel, you know, power stroke diesel with an Allison four-speed transmission when
for the zombie apocalypse?
For the zombie apocalypse, exactly. We have, I know guys that have a a gun safe absolutely packed with AR-15s, but they haven't done cardio since grade school. So, like, if the zombie apocalypse involves running from the zombies, they're done.
Yeah, well, they're like, I'll just keep motoring through the different ARs at that point. I mean, it's
exactly.
I'll just sit in the back with a cheeseburger. You know, I mean, it.
No, but that's America. We're, you know, we buy for the low use case scenario, and you know, this is actually a good segue, because you had a pretty interesting observation here about you know, is the EV problem a marketing problem, is it a price problem, or is it a psychology problem?
There was a really interesting study that was done recently out of the University of Geneva in Switzerland, and it was well documented by people in EV space about what they found, which is essentially the question was, is it technological, is it price, like what's the driver here, or is it psychological? And in the study they found that the final takeaway was that if people were presented with basic information about, here's just information about EVs in range, or here's just information about, you know, charging infrastructure, people didn't respond as positively in comparison to when they were given information that was tailored to their particular driving habits or their personal driving habits. And I was really excited to see this because, frankly, it was a really well-managed scientific and academic study that essentially validates what we had found through our work at Chargeway with making a tailored experience around your EV ownership, a selection based on car and what your charging is for you and how your road trip might work for just you. It's about personalization. And that's, each individual driver needs to know that it works for them, not for just other people, and everyone maybe.
Yeah. You know, I would love to have something like that. And, you know, we always talk about Electrify Expo and we talk about Chargeway because that's what you and I spend our days on, right? Like, that's where our minds are. I would love to see something at Electrify Expo, whether it's by Chargeway or just something similar to Chargeway, almost like an information desk where, like, okay, you drove a couple of these cars, you liked them. You know, do you want to see how one of these might fit into your life? Yeah, great. And then you've got like your kiosk and you say, okay, well, here's my trip from home to work. Okay, I would never have to charge up. Here's my trip from here to grandma's house. Okay, I could do this and this and this, and play with the different scenarios and see, like, oh, if I was going to do all that, I could pull off here and charge for 8 minutes and that would give me more than enough miles. Because I think there is that mentality still that, you know, and it comes from, I think, from that gasoline culture of, you are always either empty or full, and there is no incremental charging. There is no sense of, which is so funny because when we were in college, we absolutely understood incremental fueling.
Five bucks.
I just needed to put, I was like, well, I got 10, I can put 10 bucks of gas. It's going to get me through to Friday, and Friday my student loan hits, and then I'll be able to fill it up. Like, that idea of just enough to get you by has totally gone away. And if you look at, you know, if you look at EV charging and from that point of view, it makes a lot more sense.
Well, yeah, it's about what opportunity charging is, what a lot of people might call it in the EV space.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, workplace charging, level two charging, that's at, you know, somewhere where you might stop for just maybe even a half an hour. The idea of just click and plug in and you'll just get a little bit back. I think what's going to become very obvious over time is, and people have to learn this through either better communication education from the industry or just their own experiences, is that if you own your own home, you basically almost fill up exclusively at home. The only times you fill up away from home are for road trip needs, or if you're at a location that is not home, like you're on a, you know, you go from like Portland to Seattle or LA to San Diego and you need to fill up fast down there. So the use cases are going to turn into people understanding, if you basically, if you fill up at home, you're almost always full. Yeah. You know, almost always. I mean, you're not full. You charge to like 80, 90% because you don't need to use the full battery. But I think that to your point about like how people have had those experiences in the past of like, I just fill up with $5 or $10 here just to get me where I need to be. There are still plenty of people that are on a budget to do that all the time. And with gas prices where they're at now, people are doing it again, probably on a much broader scale. So it maybe it reintroduces people to the fact of like you don't always have to be quote full. But I will be honest, I don't think anybody likes the idea of piecemealing their fill up experience with gas. I mean, most people like the idea of just like, I do go to full and then I just get it when I'm empty because they have the time or the budget. Right?
But it's a convenience thing, right? Like it's just more, it's just too much of a pain in the butt to come back here, you know, in 3 days and put $10 more in. But sure. when you're driving an EV and you're stopping and you're just getting your cup of coffee that morning, or you're picking up, you know, a snack bar or whatever it is, if you can put another 20, 30 miles in the car relatively quickly during that time, why would you not?
Oh no, that's the thing is if you can take advantage of it and it's easy and just pull up, click, you're good to go. Then I think that will become a much more standard practice for a lot of people. I will say though, as a homeowner that has the opportunity to fill up at home in my garage, when I first got EVs, every time I left my home, I was always like, I want to plug in away from home and make sure I'm, you know, taking advantage of filling up and charging. What I realized quickly was I don't need to do that.
Oh, like, when you and I were in LA, when we were in LA, I think you went 2 or 3 days without charging.
Yeah, that's
and it was well, just like, nah, I don't care. I'll get to it when I get to it.
Well, for me though, it's because I had my car down in Los Angeles and I wasn't home, so I knew I was going to have to go find a fast charger at some point. But I knew how to find them, just like using Chargeway was around the hotel and around the venue there in Orange County. Yeah. So I knew I was safe. That electric fuel safety net, like we say with Chargeway. And so that's the use case of each. So this gets back to that study. The individual use case for each and the tailored experience to each driver is really what helps people feel comfortable and confident. And that I think is really going to start to, that that fact and reality is going to start to become much more important in conversation as we communicate to everyday people. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think that idea, that's such a great term, individually tailored experience, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that what we're seeing is that consumers already shop this way anyway. The electric vehicle market has been trying to cast a wide net to say, this works for everybody. And in most cases, it certainly does. But at the end of the day, it still has to be something that someone can personalize. And that narrative really hasn't been there. I think the automakers are going to create an individual narrative around their brand and their models that people are used to for car shopping. But that still has to have an experience for filling up with fuel.
But that's a great point, right? Because there have been like, you know, what's the right car for me? That's been around for 20 plus years where you answer like, how many people are you carrying around?
Right,
how far
right.
do you drive to work? How important is fuel economy to you on a level of 1 to 5? Like those have existed for years and have, you know, led you down this rabbit hole of choices. And, you know, eventually everybody ends up buying a Ford F-150 anyway.
Well, that's a great point because I think
especially if you do the Ford one.
Oh, especially if you have the Ford one. Yeah. They're like, did you say F-150? It's like, no, but I guess I'll take one.
I see you've used the word that begins with the letter F.
Right.
We've got the truck for you, my boy.
No, but that's true though. And I think that what's interesting on all car shopping, you know, websites, like, you know, that you go and whether it's not a dealership website or OEM site, it's just, you're going to just find car information. And it's interesting how they'll have like the SUV category, the sedan category, the sports car, convertible, truck, and then they'll have electric. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. That's not people shopping by body type. That's people shopping by fuel based on how they define it.
That's people shopping by fuel type, right? That's like clicking the diesel button. Like, I just want to know about diesel cars.
Right. So why would someone be shopping only for a fuel type, right? They're treating it like it's a person that wants that fuel type. And most people don't even know that fuel type is even readily available. That's why Electrify Expo exists, is you get to experience the vehicles, whether it's, you know, like a small vehicle, like a, you know, not a truck, but I mean, something that you can get for your family that works for your needs.
Crossover, minivan. Actually the last one we had the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is actually, it's not bad.
Well, so one of the guys that works.
I don't want to alienate 119 other vendors, but if you got a bunch of kids that scream and want to go to the beach a lot,
this is the van for you.
That might be the van. I got to tell you,
hey, it's
quiet enough. You'll hear every single complaint they have.
That's also true. Yeah, but again, as functional vehicles go, it works, and it gets you can drive pure electric on that vehicle. It's a plug-in hybrid, so you can do pure electric for, 30, 40 miles. most exactly. of your daily city driving is basically covered. So
oh, yeah, and the regenerative braking on it is actually really good. Mm-hmm. Where you know the range will say like, you know, say like 28 miles to, you know, of battery range left, and then you drive it 28 miles and it says 11 miles left, you know,
you got some good regen out of it.
Yeah, because you're doing the stop and go and you're hitting it, and if you're playing that hyper miling game of like trying to maximize the regen, you can probably take it a little bit further than that, because the EPA cycle, I hate to call it a dumb cycle, but what I mean by that is it doesn't do anything special to get the most out of the car. It just kind of puts all vehicles through the same test and says, well, this is what you're going to get when you put it on our test.
Your driving habits will, if you are not a lead foot, you can make way more range out of an EV compared to what the EPA rated range might say. So yeah, that's part of the, you know, education and experiencing of the product, that, and this is where, you know, things like a test drive does something to help you feel comfortable with the car. But the moment you get to experience it on a long-term basis, whether it's maybe even a couple days, I think that will also help people kind of transform how they feel about it. But, you know, plug-in hybrids still have a very strong place in the market, because it's kind of, I always say, it's the lily pad car. You go from your gas car to this, you know, plug-in hybrid that has both electricity and gas for fuel, and you'll still have gas as a backup if you want it, but you'll find that maybe a lot of that driving is pure electric. So
yeah, it's so funny that you put it that way, because, you know, when my son was in Springfield and I was in Chicago, driving around town in the Volvo is 100% electric. With the tiny battery that thing had, driving around Chicago was 100% electric. But when I went to Springfield, I didn't think about it. I didn't even have to look for chargers, because I knew I just put gas in it and go.
I think that plug-in hybrids still have a very important space, you know, a role to play in this space. And I think that there's just been, this is again why, you know, Electrify Expo is doing such a great job of this, is giving people the ability to experience the cars and then learn about what we're talking about, which is, hey, you don't have to go pure electric just yet if you don't want to. There might be the perfect plug-in hybrid for you that gives you, you know, 30 miles of range of just daily driving. And then when you go on that road trip, just use gas just on the road trip.
Yeah.
And you'll use gas maybe, you know, like, I mean, the last time my wife and I had a plug-in hybrid, we bought gas once the last year we owned it. Once. Yeah,
that sounds right. And then the other thing is, like, you know, there's so many purists that are out there that'll tell you, no, it has to be pure EV. That's the only way to go. And it's like, if I could remove 50% of the miles driven on fossil fuels, if you could just say, we're all still going to drive the same amount of miles, but half the time we're going to be on electric instead of fossil fuels. That is a tremendous, almost inconceivable reduction in carbon emissions.
Oh, it's huge. And actually, this gets back to that study that was done, is this is where I think the industry didn't do a great job of explaining how plug-in hybrids work, right? If you sit, I mean, there's a lot of people that think that a Toyota Prius is an electric car. It's like, they have a plug-in hybrid version, the Prius Prime, which is a great car. But there's a lot of confusion out there for how these, what the names of these vehicles mean when it comes to the fuel option.
Yeah.
I think that there is opportunity to do a better job of that. And again, when you get to experience it firsthand, get these questions answered. I mean, hey, that's why we do the podcast. That's why we're doing the shows, you know?
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, speaking of the shows, our next one is going to be in Seattle. You can definitely check that out at electrifyexpo.com to get the latest news from the EV space. Try electrifynews.com. You'll be able to find some, you know, nice little download codes and coupons and all that good stuff to visit us in Seattle. Matt is going to be joining me on the stage at Seattle. We'll be doing some live interviews there. You'll be able to listen to him on Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, all your favorite podcasting things. And I think that's about it.
It's going to be the old 80% of why you're there.
It's going to be 80% of why you're there. You think it's 20%, but then once you see how good looking Matt is in person, it's going to be 80% of the reason you leave.
This is why I appreciate you I have a face for radio, right? That's what everybody gets to hear this. And then they see it and they go, I think Joe may have been pumping this up a bit.
He seemed very excited about it. Neither one of these guys looks like Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff, I'm so glad we've come full circle on the Goldblum.
Hey, Jurassic Park, he's in theaters right now.
I know, dude, I was so excited. I said, okay, they're bringing back Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum. This means I'm going to go. But
Have you watched Peaky Blinders? Is it not insane to see Sam Neill's actual voice?
So that I have not, but I've been hearing about, like, you got to sit and watch them. Like, why? Like, it is like true Sam Neill. I was like, what was, what's fake Sam Neill?
So Sam Neill is not American. He that is not American. His voice, which, you know, maybe he'll come out to the expo next year and he'll do the interview in his Irish, whatever.
How did we not plan it so that with the new Jurassic Park coming out, we didn't have them on the show to promote it? You know, I mean, this is,
we'll do it Tuesday.
There you go.
We'll do it next week.
Well, hey, I'll call Goldblum's people. I'll be like, hey, have your people call my person Joe.
You know, you think you're funny. I'm gonna put it on the Twitter and see if we get a response.
Dude, if he knew how much we love him and the fact that there's an opportunity to just get more people loving on what they're doing now, I can't see why he'd say no.
I mean, I would think that would be the reason he did say no.
Well, I was being optimistic, but you might have.
All right, guys, I think that's a show. Matt, thank you so much.
As
everybody, you know, Electrify News. Bye.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to the Electrify News podcast, brought to you by the Electrify Expo, coming to 5 major cities in 2022. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for all the latest in e-mobility news and updates.